Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 634, Update on September 11th and Related Matters. This program is being recorded on May 18th of the year 2008. As always, at the beginning of this broadcast, let me stress that at this stage of the game, For the Record is sort of a hybrid form of broadcasting. It is meant to be both listened to and read, because in addition to the broadcast itself, there is a vast and growing amount of supplemental information available online. Not only the article-length written descriptions in the For the Record section, but the For the Record blog sphere, and also the For the Record supplemental section, the audio files being presented by Spitfire and also by sister station WFMU. There's a listener, by the way, who has transferred all of the For the Record series to MP3 files. I'll be putting a link there before too much longer. And on the Spitfire website, there is literally an entire mini library of old anti-fascist books available for download on very compact, usable PDF files, downloadable for free. And there are also not only as a written introduction to those books, but a written introduction to each of the individual volumes. So please, please, please take advantage of the vast amount of information on the web. There's a search. You can use the search function for Spitfire. And there's also a page to click on in order to support the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you hear, no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. Now, we're going to begin this update on September 11th. And related matters by using a book that is just remarkable. I've used some material by this author before. The author is a German author, Matthias Kunzel, and he has published a very important book which reinforces basically the working hypothesis that I have presented about September 11th and related matters for the longest time. This book is very scholarly, very heavily and rigorously documented, and the main part of the text is only 162 pages, and the margins really are not very big. The print, they're not very small, I should say. The print is very large. So it is a remarkable book. That book is called Jihad and Jew Hatred, subtitled Islamism, Nazism, and the Roots of 9/11. It is authored, as I said, by Matthias Kunzel, KUNTZEL, and it's published in hardcover by the Telos Press Publishing Company in New York, a copyright 2007. In a number of broadcasts, I have spoken about the Nazi origins of September 11th, and we're going to supplement that information right now. It's worth noting that the idea of using suicide aircraft to crash into New York skyscrapers in order to wage war against the United States and New York City in particular, and through that, quote, the Jews, unquote, that idea originated with Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany. In the preface to Jihad and Jew Hatred, Matthias Kunzel writes, "The idea of using suicide pilots to obliterate the skyscrapers of Manhattan originated in Berlin with Adolf Hitler. In the latter stages of the war, I never saw Hitler so beside himself as when, as if in a delirium, he was picturing to himself and to us the downfall of New York in towers of flame," unquote, wrote architect Albert Speer in his diary, again quoting, "He, Hitler, described the skyscrapers turning into huge burning torches and falling hither and thither, and the reflection of the disintegrating city in the dark sky," unquote. Not only Hitler's fantasy, but also his plan for realizing it, recall what happened on September 11th of 2001. The idea was for kamikaze pilots to fly explosive-crammed light aircraft lacking landing gear into the Manhattan skyscrapers. The drawings for the Daimler-Benz America bomber from the spring of 1944 actually exist. They show giant, four-engine planes with raised underbellies beneath which small bombers could be strapped. The bombers were to be released shortly before the plane reached the East Coast, after which the mother plane would return to Europe. The rapture into which Hitler was plunged by the thought of Manhattan in flames indicates the motive behind this fantasy. Hitler did not merely wish to fight a military adversary, he wanted to kill Jews in order to liberate mankind. Possessed by the notion that the whole of the Second World War was a struggle against an imaginary Jewish power, he deemed, quote, the USA a Jewish state, unquote, and New York the center of world Jewry. Wall Street, as a bestseller from the Weimar Republic epic put it, is, so to speak, the military headquarters of Judas. From there, his threads radiate across the entire world, unquote. Since 1941, Hitler had been pushing to get the America bombers into production in order to, quote, be able to teach the Jews a lesson in the form of terror attacks on American metropolises, unquote. Towards the end of the war, this idea became an obsession. Skipping down. What ideas propelled Atta and Mohammed Atta and his friends into action? An answer was provided by the witnesses at the world's first 9/11-related trial, that of Motesadeq, which was held between October 2002 and February of 2003 in Hamburg. That's Munir El Motesadeq. Continuing, according to a participant in the Quran Circle meetings, said Nichols, they believed in a Jewish world conspiracy, unquote. According to them, again quoting, the Second World War had been engineered by the Jews so that they could establish Israel, unquote. The head of the World Bank was a Jew. The Jews organized the economic crisis in Asia and, quote, Monica Lewinsky had been sent by the Jews to make a fool out of Clinton, unquote. There had been so much talk about New York, stated Nichols, because so many Jews lived there, unquote. They saw the city as the center of world Jewry, unquote. Motesadeg's housemates confirmed this picture. He had defended Hitler's policy and enthused about a forthcoming big action, unquote. The Jews will burn, and in the end, we will dance on their graves, unquote. Can we not see an echo of Hitler's rapture and Motesadeg's gleeful anticipation of the burning Jews, unquote? Well, that speaks for itself. There are other aspects of the Nazi origins of September 11th, including the fact that the author of the Turner Diaries, the late William Luther Pierce, head of the Neo-Nazi National Alliance, in 1998 did a shortwave broadcast called Bin Laden is Come, called Stay Out of Tall Buildings, in which he warned that Osama bin Laden was coming and that New Yorkers who lived in buildings the size of the World Trade Center might want to think about wearing hard hats. And he also predicted that there would be biological warfare attacks on the United States. By the way, the climactic episode of the Turner Diaries is a low-level suicide aerial attack against the Pentagon. Now, of course, the Turner Diaries, the role model for the Nazi terror group The Order in the 1980s, as well as for Timothy McVeigh and company and the old Oklahoma City bombing, that is, of course, just a novel, and I'm just a wacky conspiracy theorist from California. Imagine that, a low-level suicide aerial attack against the Pentagon. What a silly idea. By the way, it takes place on November 9th, 1993, in the Turner Diaries. November 9th was a very important date for the Nazis. It was on November 9th, 1918, that the sailors in the High Seas Fleet started a revolution, which in turn brought down the Kaiser and brought an end to World War I. It was for that reason that Hitler picked November 9th for the date of his 1923 beer hall putsch. November 9th, 1938 was selected as the date for the Kristallnacht, the first widespread Nazi anti-Jewish pogrom. Guess when the Berlin Wall came down? November 9th, 1989. And by the way, the person who arranged German reunification was Günter Strassmayer. He was Helmut Kohl's chief of staff, the son of one of the charter members of the Nazi Party under Hitler, and the father of Andreas Strassmayer, named by ATF informant Carol Howe as the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing. And there are evidentiary tributaries running between the Oklahoma City bombing and both World Trade Center attacks. By the way, how would a European, a German, or any other European write the date November 9th? 9/11. We're going to take a look at some other aspects of September 11th-related stories, keeping in mind what you just heard. And later on in the broadcast, time permitting, we're going to come back to Jihad and Jew Hatred by Matthias Kunzel. A remarkable story was carried about the revelations by China at the United Nations that, in point of fact, the national intelligence estimate notwithstanding, in fact, Iran is in fact going for nuclear weapons. This, by the way, is from the Daily Telegraph in the United Kingdom. This is by Damian McElroy, the foreign affairs correspondent of the Daily Telegraph. It's datelined April 4th of 2008. A remarkable story, as the is indicated here, because Iran had previously been an ally of China's. One wonders, is perhaps the recent difficulties that China's experiencing at the hands of the Dalai Lama's milieu. The Dalai Lama is the opposite of what he represents himself as being, and is a long-time player with the Underground Reich. Who knows? Is this retaliation for what we're about to read? Again, from the Daily Telegraph, April 4th, 2008, Damian McElroy, their foreign affairs correspondent, writes as follows. An article, China Reveals Iran's Nuclear Secrets to UN. It reads in part, China has betrayed one of its closest allies by providing the United Nations with intelligence on Iran's efforts to acquire nuclear technology, diplomats have revealed. Concern over Tehran's secretive research program has increased in recent weeks after officials at the International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, the UN's nuclear watchdog, discovered that Iran had obtained information on how to manufacture nuclear-armed weapons. Beijing is believed to have decided to assist the inspectors after documents seized from Iranian officials included blueprints for shaping uranium metal into warheads, the testing of high explosive used to detonate radioactive material, and the procurement of dual-use technology. Much of the new material was presented to the governors of the Vienna-based IAEA in February. That meeting is said to have triggered China's change of heart. Perhaps also the Chinese are not stupid enough to realize that if there's nuclear war in the Middle East, it's basically going to screw things for everything and everybody, including the Chinese and also us, by the way. Perhaps time permitting at the end of the program, we're going to go take a look at some of the Nazi affiliations and origins of the Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, who founded the Islamic Republic in Iran. He's not only a longtime Muslim Brotherhood protege, but his exile in France was paid for by the late François Janoux, one of the most important Nazi spies and bankers, an operative on behalf of the Underground Reich, and a man who was the heir to the political last will and testament and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. I would note that the current head of the Islamic Republic in Iran, Mr. Ahmadinejad, not only held a Holocaust denial conference in December of 2006, but has been interfacing with European neo-Nazi networks and also with people like David Duke, yet another Holocaust denier. David Duke, of course, the American Ku Klux Klan leader. As I've said before, Dukes and Nukes is a very bad combination. So do note China's blowing of the whistle on Iran's activities. Just the latest major power to disregard the U.S. or perhaps quote U.S. unquote national intelligence estimate. I suspect that one of the motives for that, basically saying that Iran had abandoned its nuclear program, was simply not to panic the already badly shaken capital markets, which would perhaps tank altogether if the impending reality of nuclear war in the Middle East became a perception that people shared. And I'm sorry to say, I think there is going to be nuclear war in the Middle East and probably other places, barring a drastic shift in things, and I don't see that happening. But I would note that the National Intelligence Estimate paper saying that Iran had abandoned its nuclear program, or its nuclear weapons program, despite abundant evidence to the contrary, that was drawn up by a fellow named Von Van Diepen. And who is Von Van Diepen? It's a nice Anglo-Saxon name. As if that wasn't enough to make you feel real good about what's happening, check out the following. George Bush has been gallivanting around the Middle East, and one of the things he did was to try to weigh in on the Saudis to produce some more oil to help drive down the price of oil and gasoline. The Saudis weren't all that enthused. They made a token gesture, but it's not viewed as really much that's going to help. And interestingly enough, the news was focused entirely, almost entirely on that. If I had been an editor for a major wire service or major daily, I think I would have stressed the following. If you liked that, noting that the Islamic fundamentalist government of Iran is going for nuclear weapons. Its president, by the way, Ahmadinejad, believes himself to be carrying out the work of the 12th Imam, the hidden Imam. Consider the following, moving from Shia to Sunni, skipping down in an article that was published, an AP story that was carried on the Yahoo News website. It's by Terrence Hunt, AP's White House correspondent. It's called Bush Fails to Win Saudi Help on Gas Prices. But guess what he's doing to help win that help? Skipping down. Bush's visit was billed as a celebration of 75 years of U.S.-Saudi relations, though they have been frayed by Arab perceptions that Washington favors Israel too much in the dispute with the Palestinians, the Iraq War, and the September 11, 2001 attacks. The two countries used the occasion of Bush's visit to sign new agreements. What were those new agreements? I'm glad you asked. Among them was an agreement for the U.S. to assist the kingdom in developing civilian nuclear power. Isn't that wonderful? Another involves U.S. promises to help protect any Saudi nuclear infrastructure with training, the exchange of experts, quote, and other support services as needed. Hadley said it would not involve U.S. troops. Oh, goody, we're going to help the Saudis with peaceful nuclear energy. Well, that's certainly a good idea. I mean, after all, Saudi Arabia is a very forward-looking country, and they don't have any domestic energy reserves of their own. I mean, where else would the Saudis get energy except from a civilian nuclear program? And, of course, they've never done anything to us. It's a perfectly stable regime. Bear in mind the Saudis. Obviously, I'm speaking tongue-in-cheek. The Saudis hired an American neo-Nazi, William Grimstead, as their Washington lobbyist, or as a Washington lobbyist in the late 90s. And by way of underscoring what a trustworthy ally they are and how utterly deserving they are of our help to develop civilian nuclear power. And again, poor Saudis, they don't have access to any energy sources without that civilian nuclear power. An L.A. Times story from April 2nd of 2008, Saudi Arabia is prime source of terror funds, U.S. says. It's by Josh Meyer, and it reads in part, Saudi Arabia remains the world's leading source of money for al-Qaeda and other extremist networks and has failed to take key steps requested by U.S. officials to stem the flow, the Bush administration's top financial counterterrorism official said Tuesday. Stuart A. Levy, a Treasury undersecretary, told a Senate committee that the Saudi government had not taken important steps to go after those who finance terrorist organizations or to prevent wealthy donors from bankrolling extremism through charitable contributions, sometimes unwittingly. Of course, the corollary to that is sometimes wittingly. Quote, Saudi Arabia today remains the location where more money is going to terrorism, to Sunni terror groups, and to the Taliban than any other place in the world, Levy said under questioning. U.S. officials have previously identified Saudi Arabia as a major source of funding for extremism. But Levy's comments were notable because although reluctant to directly criticize a close U.S. ally, he acknowledged frustration with administration efforts to persuade the Saudis and others to act. Quote, we continue to face significant challenges as we move forward with these efforts, including fostering and maintaining the political will among other governments to take effective and consistent action, unquote, Levy said, later adding, quote, our work is not nearly complete, unquote. Levy was the sole witness before the Senate Finance Committee, which Tuesday ordered an independent review of the efforts to choke off financing used by al-Qaeda and other extremist groups. Senator Max Baucus, Democrat of Montana, the committee chairman, announced the review at the end of the hearing held to assess the money-tracking campaign by Treasury's Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence headed by Levy. The Bush administration created the office in 2004 to spearhead efforts to disrupt the flow of money to extremist causes, primarily from wealthy donors in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere in the Persian Gulf. However, U.S. officials and counterterrorism experts have said that international support for the effort has waned, while terrorist groups have found ways around the financial restrictions. At the same time, there have been turf battles among the 19 federal agencies that work on the problem. So that is the country that we're going to be helping with civilian nuclear power. I mean, we've got to help them out of their energy bind. The poor Saudis have no energy. And by the way, the Bush administration, although they may have initiated various things to help interdict the terror funding, in fact, Operation Green Quest was actively squashed by elements of the Justice Department, elements of the CIA, elements of the Bush administration, because among the things that uncovered were some strong areas of overlap between the GOP and the Bush administration and the Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda, Hamas, Bank al-Taqwa milieu. That major element of intersection is the Islamic Institute of Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, and Talat Atman, literally a point of intersection between the Muslim Brotherhood, al-Qaeda, Bank al-Taqwa, former Nazi spy Youssef Nader, and the Republican Party. And what initiated the investigation into the Operation Green that culminated in the Operation Green Quest raids of March 20th of 2002? It was the investigation into Sami Al-Arian, or as I call him, Sammy the Aryan, a close political ally of George Bush, an individual who, by the way, has copped a plea, basically pleaded guilty to some of the charges against him, basically, in order to get off of some of the others. The judge refused to allow a lot of the information that had been developed into evidence. Statute of limitations had expired on a number of the charges. And, of course, the Justice Department, including the FBI, headed up by Robert Mueller, who was less than vigorous in the BCCI investigation, proved even less than vigorous vis-a-vis the investigation into Operation Green Quest. In addition to his documented links to George Bush and his administration, of course, Sammy the Aryan is the darling of the so-called progressive sector, including the Pacifica Radio Network. Sammy the Aryan's getting kind of hungry these days. This is an article from a website, the Tampa Tribune. Al Aryan gets visitors during hunger strike. Dateline Tampa, it reads in part, Sammy Al Aryan, the former University of South Florida professor who remained in a Virginia prison on contempt of court charges despite his acquittal on serious terrorist charges, has lost 32 pounds in a month-long hunger strike, according to an Islamic group's executive director who visited Al Aryan on Monday. Al Aryan is on his second hunger strike to protest his detention. His family last year moved to Egypt, and he is expected to be deported as soon as he is released from prison. But his refusal to testify before a federal grand jury is delaying his release. By the way, he said that if he testified about the International Institute of Islamic Thought, one of the institutions that was busted in the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, he feared for his life. Well, now, if there's nothing to, if there's no scorpion under that particular rock, who's going to sting him? By the way, speaking of things lurking under rocks, the sub-vigorous stance of the FBI continues. Some of this, I'm sure, is stupidity, and some of this, I think, is deliberate underground Reich / Islamist fifth column activity. The investigative project, the website of Stephen Emerson, the IPT News, his organization called the Investigative Project, gets credit for the following. This is from February 8th of 2008. Looking under a rock, FBI and CIA hit new low in recruitment drive. In a frightening and bizarre turn, the two chief agencies tapped with safeguarding America's national security have started advertising in a publication that can only be described as objectively pro-terrorism. The online edition of the Washington Report for Middle Eastern Affairs, or WRMEA, a publication linked to former Congressman Paul Findlay, who once described himself as, quote, Yasser Arafat's best friend in Congress, unquote, features recruiting advertisements seeking new agents for both the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Central Intelligence Agency. WRMEA's history of support for Hamas and other terrorist groups, as well as individual terrorists, is well known. Currently on the front page of its website, right in the center, is an homage constituting a collection of articles and hagiographies to convicted Palestinian Islamic Jihad operative Sammy Al Aryan. Al Aryan was investigated by the FBI for a decade and finally brought to trial in 2005, prosecuted by the Department of Justice in Tampa. In April of 2006, Al Aryan pled guilty to one count of, quote, conspiracy to make or receive contributions of funds, goods, or services to or for the benefit of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, or PIJ, a specially designated terrorist, unquote. This is the same Al Aryan who once told an audience of Muslims, let us damn America, let us damn Israel, let us damn their allies until death. Why do we stop? Unquote. And yet the same FBI that sought to convict him as a terrorist is now advertising for recruits on a pro-Al Aryan and pro-terrorist in general website. The pro-Al Aryan orientation is part of a long and documented history of pro-Islamic terrorist features published by WRMEA during the past 15 years. Reviewing just about any issue of this Saudi-financed magazine would clearly determine its pro-terrorist bias. Well, that certainly sounds like a wonderful recommendation. I'm glad to know that the FBI and CIA are recruiting through such an organization, and I'm even more overjoyed to know that we are now going to transfer civilian nuclear energy to the energy-starved Saudis. And, of course, the Shia rivals in the Gulf. They're working on nuclear weapons, according to many credible sources, including their former allies, the Chinese. And so things are looking really good. And one of the things that's also interesting, and bearing in mind that lurking behind activities in the Middle East basically is the economic and consequent political throw weight of oil. The business, as they say in Texas, what the Kazakhs refer to as the devil's tears. That's what they call oil. Real good name, in my opinion. And because of that, a lot of really extremist activity, including overt fascist sentiments and activities, are being tolerated by the rest of the world because they want to get their hands on the devil's tears. One of the things that is taking place, too, is an insufferable abrogation of the right to free speech that is slowly being imposed on the world by Islamic fundamentalists. I certainly respect the right of individual Muslims or Muslim cultures not to portray the Prophet Muhammad as is dictated by Islamic doctrine. However, other countries and other cultures that are not Islamic and that value free expression, such as our own in Europe's, in which political cartoons of Jesus or other deities or prophets is considered perfectly acceptable, imposing that on the rest of the world, which is something the Muslim world is basically trying to do now through the United Nations, is unacceptable to yours truly. The International Herald Tribune will wrap up this side of the broadcast. This is an AP story, Dateline April 1st of 2008. Dateline Geneva. Sadly, this isn't an April Fool's joke. It damn well should be. Arab and Muslim countries defended Tuesday a resolution they pushed through at the United Nations to have the body's expert on free speech police individuals and news media for negative comments on Islam. The United States, Canada, and some European countries criticized the role reversal for Kenyan legal expert Ambe Legabo, who has reported to the global body on measures by dictatorships and repressive governments to restrict free speech. The U.S. and other Western nations warned that the Muslim-backed resolution at the UN Human Rights Council could curtail freedom of expression and help dictatorial regimes block dissenting views. The resolution adopted attempts to legitimize the criminalization of expression, unquote, said Warren W. Titchener, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. in Geneva. The statement, proposed by Egypt and Pakistan, which passed 32-0 last week at the Council, seeks to impose, quote, restrictions on individuals rather than to emphasize the duty and responsibility of governments to guarantee, uphold, promote, and protect human rights, unquote, Titchener told the 47-nation body. The United States is not a member of the Council, but has the right to speak as an observer. European countries and others abstained from voting last week. And, of course, they abstained because they didn't want to alienate the Arab and Muslim world because they want to get some oil. The resolution was the latest move initiated by the Arab and Muslim countries dominating the Council to protect Islam from religious hatred and defamation. Islamic groups have been demanding limits on free speech ever since a Danish magazine published caricatures of Muhammad provoking riots across the Islamic world in 2006. And a lot of people died in those riots, by the way, and a lot of property was damaged. It was serious property damage in addition to considerable loss of life. And the focal point of these satirical cartoons was that a lot of people were expressing their distaste at an awful lot of the Muslim faith, which is, in their opinion, and in my opinion correctly, viewed as violent. Not to say that all Muslims are violent, not even to say that most Muslims are violent, but an awful lot of the Muslim world is. And beyond that, there's an awful lot of the Muslim world that is complicit, at least with silence, if not approval. However, good old Europe is not doing anything about it, and the U.S. ain't on the Council, so now the United Nations is once again another vehicle that is being used to roll back civil liberties. Isn't that nice? This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 634, update on 9/11 and related matters. This program is being recorded on May 18th of 2008. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.